coming up on KUCB News, Unalaska police focus on investigating the car accident that killed two high schoolers Thursday, and more on a Kodiak Island search and rescue team that helped recover the students' bodies. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics. Located in the airport cargo building, Redfish sells computers, Androids, iPhones, iPads, televisions, headphones, and unlocked phones. Business hours can be obtained by calling 359-2205.
Redfish, we got stuff.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Zoe Sobel with some local news on Monday, May 13th, 2019. Emergency responders have recovered the bodies of two Unalaska high school students who died in a car accident Thursday afternoon. Now police are shifting their attention to the ongoing investigation into why the pickup truck tumbled 900 feet down a ravine on Mount Ballyhoo and broke into pieces. Interim Police Chief John Lucking says his department is waiting on toxicology test results to determine whether the driver, 18-year-old Dustin Ruckman, was under the influence of alcohol or drugs when he lost control of the vehicle. Ruckman survived the accident that killed his high school classmates, 16-year-old Carly McDonald and 18-year-old Kiara Renteria Haste.
We have samples from the driver that are being analyzed right now, so we're anxious to see what the results are with that. And we'll just be putting the pieces together to try and develop the full picture of, you know, exactly what did happen, sticking to the facts. And, you know, it's not a matter of bringing, you know, any kind of blame. It's just a matter of our job is finding the facts as to what truly happened.
Police will also rely on autopsy results from the state medical examiner's office. Lucking says McDonald's and Renteria Hayes' bodies were being sent to the Anchorage office on Saturday for review.
They want to determine an exact cause of death. That's important to them. Document the particular signs of trauma so that if they have a story to tell in relation to the investigation about what happened, then those facts can be collected.
Emergency responders spent some 30 hours staging search and recovery operations on the Ulaktahead side of Ballyhoo, where the truck went into a ravine and tumbled to the shoreline below on Thursday around 1:30 p.m. Due to the vehicle's widespread wreckage and the mountain's rough and extremely steep terrain, police said Renteria Hayes' body wasn't recovered until Friday around 2 p.m., with the recovery of McDonald's body following 4 hours later. Lucking says about 30 responders helped, including local police officers, firefighters, and emergency medical service providers, as well as two members of Kodiak Island Search and Rescue who were flown to the island on a C-130 aircraft by the U.S. Coast Guard.
Everyone is off the mountain. Everyone is safe, short of, you know, bumps and bruises and a couple pulled muscles. I think everybody is better for having a little bit of time away from that mountain.
While the Kodiak Rescue Unit was scheduled to leave Saturday afternoon, local responders plan to sit down with counselors Saturday evening.
Stress-wise, obviously, it's dramatic, but you kind of get in a slow mode while it's happening, and it's afterwards that things start getting in when you do have time. So setting up a debriefing to deal with some stress just amongst ourselves. So we'll be, you know, supporting each other with the health and mental health to kind of like get some of the tension out if people need it. Just like the community, everyone has to deal with things in their own way.
Lucking also says local responders will take time to review their operations.
By and large, it's an incredible response. And even as efficient as it could be for the conditions that we face. But there's always room for improvement. And you know, there are big things that we recognize, and there will be little things that when we look, we'll see.
Lucking says he's already identified response time and training as two areas that need work, especially after a helicopter sent to help was grounded in Cold Bay and a Kodiak rescue unit was needed for their mountaineering skills.
We learned that even for the Coast Guard to respond with a helicopter, if there's not a vessel in the immediate area, 6 hours was the minimum that we were able to get some help. And that's just not acceptable. So often in the island, we're going to have to take care of ourselves. And that means training people and getting some equipment here that we haven't had in the past.
Among those helping with emergency operations were two members of Kodiak Island Search and Rescue. Stephen Walebski and Philip Chersich are responders for the volunteer group, and they were the ones who were lowered down the Ballyhoo Ravine during recovery efforts. KUCB's Laura Craigle spoke with them Saturday. Here's Walebski explaining how the team was called to Unalaska and how they approached the operation.
Two nights ago, like at 11 o'clock at night, I got a call from the State Star coordinator, and he said, well, you guys are the closest organized rope team, and he has already spoken to the Coast Guard because they were willing to fly us with a C-130. They had a flight in the morning to go out to ADAC, so they were able to put us on that flight and bring us out here. Otherwise, he would have had to bring somebody out of Anchorage.
You know, you train in a lot of different environments, you're saying. So coming here with our cliffs and with particularly that part of the mountain, what were you facing? How did you approach it?
It was a long way down, and we luckily had brought in enough rope that we made it. And then we talked to the local fire department, because they have some rope. But luckily, we were able to bring it up just for us. And the troopers took us out to the site, and we looked down the slope, and we built an anchor off of the back of the one of the troopers' vehicles, and we were able to get lowered down to the crash site. And yeah, we just get on the ground. You try to utilize all your, you know, education and information to try to build something so you can go down there safely. And
one of the biggest concerns is if you don't have a good anchor, like a natural anchor available, like in Kodiak, some areas, you know, there might be three giant, you know, fat spruce trees at the top of the cliff that you can basically use as an anchor to tie your system off to. We brought materials to build what are called dirt anchors. They're basically pound steel rods into the ground and network them together. And it's very secure, but you need soil for it. And sometimes these cliff tops are just rocky and really poor quality rock. So the fact that we were able to drive a vehicle basically to the cliff top and use the vehicle itself as the anchor, I mean, that was probably half the battle won right there. And as Steve said, the other difficulty was simply the distance down slope. And so we had to tie three ropes together end to end. And one of the slightly difficult parts of dealing with multiple sections of rope is it becomes a bit of a slow, meticulous logistical issue to pass the knots through all the system. But I have to say, other than that, we were extremely fortunate, like, especially with the availability of a vehicle as an anchor, the fact that there weren't a lot of really abrupt transitions in the ravine. It was fairly even gradient, sloped down, even though there was a lot of loose rock. Luckily, the ravine didn't make a bunch of bends, you know, left and right. It was a relatively straight shot. So communication worked fairly well. The ropes weren't in danger of, you know, rubbing across sharp edges and being cut. We weren't having to deal with a bunch of rock fall, like fresh rock fall coming down, endangering the rescuer. As bad as the situation was, it was pleasantly textbook, I guess I would characterize it.
Thank you for your work, and I'm glad to hear that it did go as smoothly as it did. You know, I was talking to Chief Lucking about, you know, learning from this experience, and fortunately, given how steep so many of our mountains are and our roads, we don't have to deal with this all the time, but it is maybe a lesson. There are lessons here for us to learn. And I guess with your expertise, what, if anything, do you think the City of Unalaska, our public safety department, our responders, what should we be thinking about for the future?
I think we're fortunate to have a number of people in our organization, you know, that have a mountaineering or a rock climbing background. They're, I don't want to call them rope hobbyists, but, you know, they have an interest in learning and staying current on the intricacies of how rope rescue works. They kind of spur the organization to practice those things. I think if Dutch Harbor wanted to develop a volunteer search and rescue group, maybe it could be a subset of one of the, you know, existing local or state agencies. And then it's probably helpful to maybe identify a few people in the community that are already interested in backcountry outdoors, maybe have a little bit of climbing background. It's not strictly necessary. The type of rope work that we did, I don't want to call it formulaic, but there's a very kind of cookbook way of setting these things up that you really don't want to deviate from, because it's within the rescue community. These are tried, true, not foolproof, but fool-resistant systems. destination. We just train in some pretty specific things, and it's sort of a natural extension of our interest to begin with.
Is there anything else I should be asking you, things that would be good to relay to the community at this point after a trying couple days? Anything else?
Well, I mean, we'd like to extend our condolences to the community in general. I mean, we're glad that we were able to help, but we're sorry that it was under these circumstances.
That was Stephen Walebski and Philip Cherisich, members of Kodiak Island Search and Rescue, who coordinated with a group of about 30 responders in total. You can learn more about their volunteer organization online at kisar.org. And the Aleutian Pribilof Islands Association has behavioral health staff in Unalaska to support grieving students, families, and community members. You can reach providers by calling 359-2743. They're available over the phone, or they'll provide information on how you can make a face-to-face appointment. Staff may not be able to answer the phone right away, but if you leave a message, APIA staff will follow up as soon as possible. Additional behavioral health staff are available at APIA's Anchorage office. They can be reached at 222-9764 or 1-844-375-2742. Again, that's 222-9764 or 1-844-375-2742. And Unalaskans Against Sexual Assault and Family Violence is also available to reach USAFE's 24-hour support line. Call 581-1500. Again, that's 581-1500. A disagreement between the legislature and Governor Mike Dunleavy over school funding may be heading towards a constitutional showdown, one that could affect whether the state sends money to school districts, KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports.
The budget bills passed by the House and Senate this year didn't include any money for schools. That's because last year, the legislature passed 2 years of school funding. But Attorney General Kevin Clarkson issued a legal opinion saying last year's law is unconstitutional. Assistant Attorney General Corey Mills explains why Clarkson wrote the opinion.
We have very strong language in our Constitution about having an annual process where all programs compete for funding. And so the significant legal question here was, can a legislature bind a future legislature and future governor by appropriating future revenues?
Dunleavy said Tuesday during a session streamed on Facebook that he wouldn't veto the school funding if the legislature includes it in this year's budget bill. That's important because Dunleavy originally proposed a 25% cut to education.
Although we had initially proposed reductions in education, what we have said to legislative leadership is that put the funding in, make sure that there's funding in the budget, and we will not veto that funding in any form or fashion. We will let that funding go through.
While Dunleavy says he wouldn't veto education funding, he hasn't ruled out other line item vetoes. Dunleavy says that without money in this year's school budget, the state won't be able to send money to school districts starting in July. But lawmakers aren't budging. House Speaker Bryce Edgman says the governor is needlessly confronting the legislature.
It just seems that a fight is being picked where a fight doesn't exist. You know, it's very clear that the legislature has the power to appropriate in as much as the governor has a right to veto. And we're going to stand behind our decision to appropriate education funding, which we did the last couple of years.
Edgman says he expects the legislature to stand its ground, even if the governor calls a special session on the issue. But both sides have expressed concern about the precedent it would set if they don't prevail. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Zoe Sobel. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org. Please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecast.